910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. The nation's spy agencies are waiting to hear if Congress will renew FISA, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, that allows the FBI and CIA to spy on the communications of foreign nationals without a warrant. FBI Director Christopher Wray telling Congress this week why FISA is so important.
It helps us find out who these terrorists are working with and what they're targeting, and it's what we need to stop them before they kill Americans.
The House expected to vote on reauthorization of FISA today. State Department spokesman Matthew Miller says his boss, Secretary of State Antony Blinken, has been making calls to world leaders about the possibility of a retaliatory strike by Iran on Israel.
To make clear that escalation is not in anyone's interest and that countries should urge Iran not to escalate.
The interpreter for Dodgers star player Shohei Ohtani is expected to turn himself in today. He's accused of stealing $16 million from Ohtani. This is ABC News. Russia keeping up the attacks on Ukraine's power plants. A new strike taking out a large plant near Kyiv. Russia has turned its drones and missiles on Ukraine's energy infrastructure, forcing power cuts in some regions. New concerns about ongoing drug shortages across the country. Here's ABC's Andrea Fuji.
Doctors and pharmacists are sounding the alarm as a nationwide drug shortage hits a record high. Cancer treatments, diabetes, ADHD, and injectable drugs critical in life-saving operations are just some of the medications in low supply. Experts say there are several reasons as to why: supply and demand, manufacturing and raw material issues following the pandemic, and lack of incentive for big pharmaceutical companies to produce the generic drugs that have now become so cheap.
And an ATM is going to the dogs in Philly. ATD Bank locations has what it calls an automated treat machine. If a dog puts its paws on the mat, out pops a treat, no account needed. Sherry Preston, ABC News.
Nightline with Pete Schwabba.
I always wanted to be taller. All I wanted to do all day is play basketball. And I remember this guy from the team came in, and he was having a bad day. And he looks at, we're just playing a pickup game, and he goes, "Hey, guys, can I get a dunk?" Somebody throws him the ball. And he runs and powers it down, and I'm like, how cool after a bad day to be able to throw a dunk down. Like, you don't get the same satisfaction with launching an angry two-handed set shot, you know.
Nightline with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights 7 till 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Maggie Dawn Show.
Evan Goyke, candidate for the City of Milwaukee City Attorney's Office. Evan, you and I were texting yesterday because with every campaign that I've ever known someone that's running, there is always what I'm going to call the yard sign controversy.
It's true that yard signs don't vote.
Yes.
But there is deep, deep psychological warfare with
right.
Yard signs.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Wisconsin teachers are leaving the profession at an alarming rate. That's according to the Department of Public Instruction's workforce report for 2022. The report also says teacher pay in real dollars has dropped 20% over the past 12 years. Changes for the better at Wisconsin's youth prisons. Limits on pepper spray, restraints, and strip searches correlate with better behavior. Deputy Corrections Secretary Jared Hoy tells a state Senate committee that's not all.
Staff morale was exceptionally good overall at the time of the visit. A review of video over the reporting period showed staff regularly engaging with youth. Staff were extremely friendly.
New rules on a trial basis at Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake schools since February could become permanent this year. And that's what you need to know. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
The Brewers head to Baltimore. I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers open a weekend series against the Orioles at Camden Yards. Yesterday's game with the Reds got rained out in Cincinnati. Rescheduled as a doubleheader in August. NBA, the Bucks in Oklahoma City to take on the Thunder tonight. The Bucks coming off wins over the Celtics and Orlando Magic. NFL, the Packers on the tailgate tour, headed to Brazil this fall to take on the Eagles for the opener. I asked Kenny Clark,
do you know anybody that's been to Brazil?
I went there a couple years ago, actually.
You did?
Yeah, I was in
in Brazil. I was in Rio, oh. And I had an amazing time, man. There's so many Packer fans out there, so many football fans out there. I went during the Super Bowl and watched the Super Bowl at a bar, and the energy there was amazing. I can only imagine, you know, what the experience we're going to have when we out there actually playing a football game in Brazil. The fans are going to be amazing.
So LaFleur's coming to you for tips on how to get around Brazil.
yeah. You're going to have to come to me for the tips.
That's Packers defensive lineman Kenny Clark. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
A few clouds this morning, becoming mostly sunny by later this afternoon. Our high today, 55, with wind out of the northwest at around 10 to 20. Tonight, clear 30. Tomorrow, sunshine 67. By Sunday, it'll be mostly sunny with a high of 68. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 40.
Hey everybody, Todd Allball here. Friday noon to 2, warm weather on the way. So too are plastics on our beaches. We'll discuss on Civic Media.
Rice Lake's choice for news, talk, and sports. The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning and happy Friday. 6:06 on this Friday morning, April 12th, 2024. Another beautiful day to have you up here, up north, live from Lake Wissota. From wherever you're listening across the Civic Media Radio Network around Wisconsin, around planet Earth, over the Civic Media app or through social media or by podcast, I got a question for you. What's your OJ story? Everybody has an OJ story. I've got mine to tell you, not like meeting him personally or something, because then it'd be like, no, don't kill me. But, you know, something about the case. So if you'd like to share after you hear mine and you have your own memories of the trial, the slow speed chase, him as an actor, him as a football player before his passing away yesterday. Call us or text us 855-75-CIVIC, 855-75-CIVIC. You can call, you can send a text message to that number instead if you prefer. And of course, you can use the Civic Media app to listen to the show, to call the show, and to text the show. We are loaded in this show today, and I'm not talking like, you know, we started with Bloody Marys or something. I mean full of guests, loaded. We are going to have Christina Lorre in on Friday, which is a little unusual, but you'll understand why when we start talking about the Dane County Farmers Market and about Top Chef Wisconsin. Our usual conversation with Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil at 6:30 will include a third person, my colleague from the Arizona outlet for Courier Newsroom, the Copper Courier, Cam Stevenson, and we will talk about the Arizona Supreme Court upholding an 1864 abortion ban. We'll have today's history lesson. That'll be followed by Brittany Merlot's forecast for the weekend. We'll be talking to the head of the National Committee to Protect Social Security and Medicare, who'd like to share a few words on his impression of Eric Hovde saying, you know, most nursing home residents are, you know, going to be dead in 5 to 6 months. Voting shouldn't really be a priority. Yeah, he has thoughts on that. Then at 7:20, former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel will be here, part of our new weekly segment Fridays at 7:20 about legal issues, especially since he has his own legal show on Saturday mornings. So he will preview the show. But we will also preview what's supposed to happen in a courtroom on Monday when jury selection begins, when a criminal trial begins for the very first time for an ex-president of the United States going on trial for various crimes. And so we'll talk to Jim about that. Mark Jacob at 7:30 talking about media coverage of the week's news, and Dan Schumacher talking sports at 7:50. So all just a very full show that we have for you today. Temperatures around Wisconsin during the 6 a.m. hour. It's 45 degrees here on Lake Wissota. Hayward's at 39, Park Falls 40. Wausau 43 degrees right now. Green Bay 46. La Crosse 50, Wisconsin Rapids 45, Oshkosh 47. It's 46 in Madison. It's 45 degrees in Waukesha, where one Greg Bach stands by ready to tell us. You look like you're going to tell us something. Nothing.
What? Okay. No, you were talking. I don't know.
You were like, I can't wait to say something.
Oh, no, I was just saying, hi.
Oh, okay. Here it is. Greg Bach is prepared to say something. Go, Greg. Hi.
Hello.
I'll ask about OJ in a second here, but it's Friday morning, which means for a lot of people, it's the end of the work week. For other people, I'm very sorry. The work week continues, like Greg Bach here, but he is in the business of ha-ha, so let's find out who's going to do who's going to do the ha-ha-ing this weekend at the Laughing Tap.
That's the saddest way to put it. He's in the business of ha-ha.
He's in the ha-ha, good. You know, and not too much of it, because as we all know, too much ha-ha leads to boo-hoo. So hopefully just the right amount of ha-ha this weekend for you.
Actually, too much ha-ha leads to weeing your pants sometimes, but that's neither here nor there. This weekend, so we have a bunch of shows, actually. So this weekend at the Laughing Tap, we have Alex Kuman, who is fantastic. She has been on Comedy Central. She's been on the Don't Tell Network. She is just a force. She's awesome. She's wonderful to watch. Very smart, very fun. Yeah, she's going to be great. I haven't seen her in a while. And then this Sunday for 414 Day, because it's the 14th of April in Milwaukee, they call it 414 Day, we have our keg stand-up show at Lakefront Brewery. And that show is available at MilwaukeeComedy.com. But that show is selling. That show is probably going to sell out. So get your tickets now before they go. If you have nothing to do Sunday night, it's a 6:30 show with a full menu, full bar. It's wonderful. If you want to come out tonight, 7:30, tomorrow, 7:30, 10, laughingtap.com. It's just a lot of comedy happening, baby.
It's just a lot. I know. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
All right. Let me give my OJ story.
Okay.
And then you let me know if you've got any particular things that you want to share.
OJ story?
OJ. It deals with, Sherry, was a medical resident at the time. And in your residency class, which she was doing through the University of Minnesota Hospitals, there were seven of them in the class, all OBGYN residents, meaning they were a couple of years out of medical school, but still in training. And every year there's, you know, a graduation dinner for the half dozen or so residents who are graduating. And so this was 1994. So Sherry was in her third of 4 years, but we were attending the graduation dinner for, you know, the classmates a year ahead of her. And, you know, so there's a whole bunch of hospital staff there, friends, family at this country club. So we're in this banquet room, you know, and there's several tables. People are making little speeches and inviting each of the residents up and, you know, slideshows and everything. At some point, amongst all the murmuring, we're turning and realizing the room is emptying. And we knew that the NBA finals were on the TV in the bar next to the banquet room. But we're like, there's no way people going out there just to watch an NBA game. And so finally curiosity got the better of me. And all I see is this white Bronco, you know, going down the freeway. And pretty soon the residency dinner all but canceled as everybody was fixated on the TV to see how this thing ended. Little did we know it wasn't the end for OJ. It was only the beginning of essentially a long national nightmare, is the way I think of that trial, but I'll spout off on that in a bit. So that, of all the things about the OJ trial and everything, that story always comes to mind, that it just interrupted everything. What about you?
I was on a school camping trip when we found out about he had been arrested. And I mean, for me, like I was saying earlier before we went on the air, there's three distinct chapters for me with OJ. There's football player that I didn't really know well, because he was a football player when I was really, really little. So I just knew that he was a football player. Then there is his murdering years, which are the ones that I would, you know, I would say we should focus on more than trying to, like, people are like, oh, he was such a good football player. I'm like, yeah, he was a murderer.
Yeah.
But for me, like, the most distinct portion as a comedian, as a comic fan, as a person who loves comedy movies, it would be...
Hiya, buddy. Hey. Doc says I should be on my bean and as good as new in a week.
And back on the force.
The Naked Gun.
The Naked Gun. Yes.
him just being the fall guy literally in every scene he's in. I mean, he's great in those movies. He's very funny, but you know, that's you know, once the criming started happening, I'm like, nah, yes. I'm good. I'm done.
Yep. I mean, there's it's not like you've built up this repository of goodwill and people are gonna go, oh, forget about that. He's so funny. Yeah. No, it didn't work that way for OJ at all. And yeah, I remember all of that. I'm just old enough to remember hearing about him. Once again, this year for the Buffalo Bills, he set this record and this record, and that he was able to then make that leap to acting. And he was pretty good as a comic actor. I guess he did some serious roles as well. But that trial changed everything.
Yeah.
It fixated American attention completely. It took over everything. I mean, Jay Leno was hosting the Tonight Show, and it just got so old. Yeah. The OJ jokes, the Lance Ito jokes. You remember the judge that was there?
Yep.
And look, for my money, this trial of OJ's was just such a failure on so many levels. It was a failure in the way that the prosecution handled the case. It was the prosecution, Chris Darden, who wanted OJ to try on the gloves, and then they didn't fit, without thinking that having been drenched in blood, they might have shrunk once the gloves dried. That apparently that never occurred to him. The judge handled it poorly. We learned much more about police misconduct. You know, this was only 3 years removed from the Rodney King beating in L.A. But most of all for me, and this is where I am decidedly in the minority amongst other journalists, in my mind, that trial right there should have shut the book on allowing live TV cameras in the courtroom, because it did exactly what I predicted was going to happen with that trial. It wasn't a trial. It was a TV show. It was a theater. People were playing to the cameras. People were becoming celebrities, lost all sight of the seriousness of the issue and the main job, which was to weigh the evidence and come out with a fair verdict. Instead, jurors were looking for, you know, a verdict that played well to society rather than the case. Yeah. And so I would be fine if there were not cameras in the courtrooms. You have to have reporters in there. Let reporters report. But as far as you know, we know what the effect. You point a TV camera at somebody, they're not going to be themselves, right? No, they're gonna play up to the camera.
And the other thing too is, and I was too young to understand it. But as you get older, and this can be tied to the Monica Lewinsky thing too, is at the center of this are a mother and a father who lost a child, and are the constant butt of jokes, and like we lost our ability to identify with people who lost a child. And that's what I think about now, is I think about their family and what they went through and the unintentional spotlight they were thrust into. And no one, it's sad looking back at it now. And that's why I refuse to look back and be like, wow, he was such a great actor and he was such a good, I don't care. I don't care.
Nope. It doesn't matter. And it maybe gives some kind of closure in some way to some folks, but, you know, lacking a true confession, and I doubt that there was a deathbed confession, you know, that's just a part of our history that now gets to forever be debated, even though in my mind there really shouldn't be any debate at all. One news story to tell you about before we pause and then bring in Christina Lori, and that is that Justice Ann Walsh Bradley announced she is not going to be running for re-election a year from now, April of 2025. That makes for a wide open state Supreme Court race. If conservatives win that, they will retake control of the court. So as big as the Janet Protasiewicz, the Dan Kelly campaign was, this next one a year from now is going to be even bigger. So when the presidential election is done, we're going right back into election mode, Wisconsin. I'm sorry, but it's that important. Christina Lori next. You're up north.
The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Most of us can agree the decision to have an abortion should be between a person and their doctor. Politicians should have no say at all. Thankfully, Senator Tammy Baldwin is standing up for our rights and working to keep politicians out of our medical decisions. After Roe v. Wade, the court case that protected abortion rights was overturned, Tammy Baldwin introduced the Women's Health Protection Act, which would ensure access to abortion everywhere in the United States, including here in Wisconsin. The bill would end extreme abortion bans that have no exceptions for rape, incest, or the life of the mother, and threaten doctors with criminal charges for providing abortion care. Senator Baldwin also introduced legislation that would protect the right to travel across state lines for reproductive health care and safeguard access to contraception. Call Senator Tammy Baldwin at 202-224-5653. Tell her thank you for fighting back against extreme abortion bans. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together, Inc.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
All right, back at 620 on Up North News Radio, where Christina Lori's here. Why, you say? Well, because a couple of her favorite things are here. The Top Chef show is being filmed in Wisconsin, or was filmed in Wisconsin. And next week's episode is from the Dane County Farmers Market. And the Dane County Farmers Market opens this weekend. So here's our expert on all of these things, Christina Lori, special edition. How are you?
I'm great. That's my favorite way to be introduced. I was going to stun everyone and start singing "It's the Most Wonderful Time of the Year," but I thought I would save them the headache.
No, do that Saturday, taking a selfie of yourself just dancing around and singing to that song, and the looks that people give you. Then throw your hat in the air like Mary Tyler Moore, and you know, it'll live forever if you do it that way.
Cute. Okay. I like it, but I know you think I'm crazy, Pat, but I'm not the only person that feels this way about the farmers market. I mean, it's a really exciting time for people that live anywhere in Dane County and arguably anywhere in the state. People travel all over to get here. Of course, the Dane County Farmers Market, it does run year round, but Saturday is when it returns finally to the square. And also, most importantly to me, it extends its hours because during the winter, they only have a 4-hour window. It's always super crowded inside, limited number of vendors, limited selection. I'm so excited to see it back in all its glory. I'll go over the logistics just in case anyone is not as versed in this as
Sounds
I am. The market opens at 6:15 a.m. I would recommend going at that time if you are really, really attached to a certain product, if you have a shopping list and want to absolutely guarantee that you are going to get what you have on that list. Otherwise, the market, it really starts getting busy around 8, and I'd say from 8 to 11, it's really packed on the square. The market does run until 1:45. And my personal take is that it is fun to go within that last hour. You walk around, yes, they might be out of a lot of things. Some vendors already pack up and go, but the ones that are left are really trying to sell everything they have left. So you'll get a lot of 2-for-1 deals. You can kind of do your own version of the show Chopped and just buy up whatever ingredients are there and then try to, you know, make your own meal out of them. A lot of baked goods, you know, they're trying to get rid of those as well. So you can get specials on that. And also, you don't have to deal with the giant, giant crowds.
Well, so let's make that transition into Top Chef then, because the preview for next week's show, and we have not seen the episode, but we know that they're already in Madison from, you know, this week's challenge. They're going to be sent to the farmers market. And the twist that I got in there is that you're going to shop at the farmers market first, and then they're going to tell you what kinds of dish you're supposed to create. And the theme is Wisconsin supper clubs. So knowing all of that and knowing the farmers market as you do, what do you think we're going to see next week?
I just have to say, I will be highly disappointed if someone does not stop by the Stella's hot and spicy cheese bread booth and integrate that into their dish somehow.
Oh, they have to.
I hope they did their research and know that that is the booth to go. Even if they didn't, they should be able to smell it and have been attracted to that. I'd also love to see something featured. I think this would be interesting. One of the most popular booths at the market is Chris and Lori's Bakehouse. They're known for their scones. It's a giant booth it's right across the street from the Old Fashioned on that corner of the square. And their scones range from, they label them either healthy schmelthy, which is obviously the least healthy ones, or ultra healthy, and they have like vegan-y scones. Why I mention them is because not only are they really popular, but this is actually going to be their last market season. So I'd love for those chefs to get to enjoy a scone from there. And I'd also love to see just how they can work it into a regular dish. Obviously, there are the obvious picks, like any of the cheese curd booths are great. There's also 15 new vendors this year. So that'll be fun for them to check out. And there's really, I was going to give you like a general overview of them, but they span every different type of food, which we don't always see every year. You know, usually they're kind of like either a lot of vegetable farms or a lot of, you know, dairy farms, but there's bakeries on there, there's cheese, there's fruits, there's vegetables, there's meat.
So with that wide range, what kind of dishes do you think you're going to see here? I mean, you think supper club. And you're going to the farmer's market because there, it's not like you can't necessarily get your steak there, but there's other things.
Yeah. I mean, well, they can. There are some booths that sell meats. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the positives out of the pandemic, that people can actually order ahead of time so that when they go there, you know, the farm only brings the meat that was already sold. So they know it's going to go. But I'd love to see some creative sides. I mean, of course, I'd love to see how they could reinvent like nothing to me tops a fried cheese curd. Mm-hmm. So I'd love to see their take on it, especially since these chefs come from all across the country. Like have they had them outside of Culver's where they live? I'd be interested to know what they're going to do with them. I'd also love a take on the one thing, and I hesitate to bash supper clubs anyway, but they really need to up their game on desserts. Mm-hmm. So I mentioned a bunch of different bakery booths already. I think I'd love to see like their take on maybe a, you know, grasshopper, or are they going to, you know, can they use some of the local honey from a great booth and turn that into some sort of sweet? I'm more focused on like the sides and desserts, I think.
And is this Dan's round to lose as the Milwaukee based chef? You know, hitting up a classic Wisconsin farmer's market, having to make a supper club thing. I worry that he's going to overthink it and suddenly we won't have a hometown chef testant in the mix.
I also worry that he's going to be graded on a curve and held to a different standard.
Good
because
point.
How could they not? Mm-hmm. You know, he just knows how to work with products here. Previously, I think last week they had the hops challenge, which was interesting because I don't think he necessarily shined on that like they thought he would. But just because you live here doesn't mean you necessarily work with all of those.
I wouldn't know what to do with hops. I mean, that was an impossible task from a couple of weeks back. To me, one of the surprises has been Michelle. She's a barbecue pit master. And yet she's won a couple of things, even though she was completely out of her element. So she's one that I'm watching to see if this, you know, barbecue gal from Texas can whip up, you know, some true Wisconsin supper club fare.
Yeah. And I agree. I think some of them, the ones that are, you know, raise their hand that they've worked at Michelin star restaurants, I think sometimes their ego gets in the way and they're too by the book. The people that just kind of have cooking in their blood and can throw together anything are really who thrives on the program.
They really are. So there you go. It's got, again, if you are singing about your favorite things, you got Top Chef based in Wisconsin, you've got a farmer's market, and oh, by the way, I know we mentioned it once before, but if you ever go, it's counterclockwise, right?
Yes.
Counterclockwise.
That was something that was pointed out. I never realized how unique that was, but then I was reading little episode recaps of Top Chef, and every single one mentioned, you know, Dane County Farmer's Market. You must follow the current.
You must.
This is not a time to be an individual.
Right. Don't be that person. So we'll have a lot to look forward to next Wednesday night on Bravo, and this Saturday when it opens on Capitol Square. I'm sure we'll see you there sometime. Christina Lurie, thanks. Have a great weekend.
I'll let you know what I pick up next week, Pat.
Perfect. I know what she's going to pick up, and I see it caught your attention as well as mine.
Yeah.
The spicy cheese bread.
I've only had warm spicy cheese bread once, and it was a long time ago, and I miss it. So,
I can't wait to next time I get down there do that again. All right, Kia Vakil and Cam Stevenson from the Arizona Copper Courier join us after the Midwest Farm Report. You're up north.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Matt and Air on Air.
The Todd Alba Show.
Luke, I'm just going to say it again. The real problem here was that goofy in-season soccer tournament that they had. That threw everything
off.
That's
not, what are you talking about? That was December basketball. You just couldn't figure out the rules.
You're exactly right. There are goofy rules I couldn't figure out. I don't like them.
You would not do well with driving on the left-hand side of the road.
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely
not. You would just start freaking out.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Penny-pinching consumers here in the United States aren't the only one changing their buying patterns at the grocery store. I'm PM Yankee, starting you off before the opening bell on a finally Friday morning. Quick look at what's happening in agribusiness news. Katie Burgess, broker analyst with EverAg, is keeping an eye on it. And she says it's not just U.S. consumers that are trying to find value at the grocery store.
The other one that I'm watching carefully is just how consumers in other parts of the world are dealing with inflation. So similar to how consumers here have been paying more for groceries, gas, labor, all sorts of things like that are more expensive here in the U.S., that's even worse, especially in places like Southeast Asia, where they've had to pay more for their primary grain food staples. And so because of that, it just doesn't leave that much room in the budget for dairy. And so consumers, they've only been willing to buy dairy products at relatively low prices, and that really has hurt global prices for dairy producers worldwide.
That's Katie Burgess. She's one of the broker analysts with EverAg, and you can feel that downward pressure in our dairy markets. Yesterday, barrel cheese dropped a penny and a quarter to 154 and three quarters. 40-pound block cheese was down six at 151, and AA butter declined another 3¾ cents on Thursday to 289 and a quarter per pound. We also had a World Ag Supply Demand Report that hit the marketplace yesterday. Is the market hitting back today? Numbers are next.
I look at this dairy cow, and again, it's the animal that I love. The things that this dairy cow can do and the way that she can produce milk, to me, there is no substitute for milk in the world. And to be able to keep cows and help cows produce that for people, to me, that's a privilege. I'm Dr. Bill Zimmer. Nutrition and microbials, commonly called probiotics. That's BioVet. Learn more at bio-vet.com.
Innovation.
The April World Ag Supply Demand Report wasn't quite as bullish as the market had hoped for yesterday. The government is predicting lower corn and higher soybean ending stocks. Right now, they're pegging the 2024 corn price at $4.70 a bushel. That's down 5 cents. The season average soybean price, according to the World Ag Supply Demand Report, forecast now at $12.55 a bushel. Down 10 cents. We'll see where it falls. This morning in Chicago, we're still mixed as far as our grain trade's concerned. December corn's down a penny and a half, currently at 464 and a half. November beans down a penny and a half, 1162 and three quarters. July wheat up just a half a cent right now, 566 and three quarters. Currently, the May Class 3 milk that goes into cheese, that's up 11 at 1613. The June milk is up 9 right now, 1662 a hundredweight. So there's your market snapshot. On a Friday, I'm Farm Director Pam Yonke.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
A few clouds this morning, becoming mostly sunny by later this afternoon. Our high today, 55, with wind out of the northwest at around 10 to 20. Tonight, clear 30. Tomorrow, sunshine 67. By Sunday, it'll be mostly sunny with a high of 68. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Right now, it's 39.
Earl Ingram.
Let's talk a little bit about what public education did to move this nation forward and continues to do, even though it's under assault.
The one place where we get to live out and practice what it means to be a citizen in a democratic institution. The attacks on public education are really attacks on democracy.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Sawyer County's choice for news, talk, and sports. The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
6:34 on this Friday morning, Up North News Radio. Pat Kreitlow here in Chippewa Falls, Kia Vakil in Los Angeles. And we're joined by my colleague in Arizona at the Copper Courier, Cam Stevenson, who's at ASU. Does that mean, what is that, Scottsdale, Glendale, Phoenix?
This campus is downtown Phoenix, but they are everywhere.
Okay. Well, welcome. Nice to have you here.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's, you know, there was a lot going on in Arizona this week. As you know, you're the talk of the country again. Congratulations.
Someday it'll be for something good, but not this week.
See, normally I'd like to kind of start it lighter. So you hang there for a second, because Kia and I have a shared interest in something from news that came out this week. Kia, what do you say? We go to Brazil. You can watch your Eagles. I can watch my Packers in that season opener. You up for it?
Let's do it. If we can get the time off right before the election, let's do it.
The time, it's right before an election, you know, the company credit card. I don't see any issues at all with us going to that, but
no, I'm sure they'll love that.
Oh yeah. I'm sure already they're going to say, edit this part out, but we're here anyway. So we've got Cam here, Kia, so that, you know, you don't have to carry the full weight of explaining what the hell happened in Arizona. So let me kick it over to Cam first on this Supreme Court ruling saying that an 1864 law is enforceable. Cam, based on the makeup of the court and the arguments, was it as much a shock there as it was to the rest of the country?
Honestly, I'm going to go with yes and no. If you look at the law and the way that the legal structure of the arguments in this case were set up, it was pretty much a foregone conclusion that this abortion ban was going to come back. The only wild card, I would say, is just that our Supreme Court is so politically motivated. Our Supreme Court was expanded a few years back by a Republican governor who is very pro-abortion or anti-abortion, and he, you know, put judges in place, much like former President Trump, who are also very anti-abortion. However, they're also very politically savvy. And so them deciding to put this out right before an election is surprising. I thought they would have at least tried to hold off until the end of the year.
Oh no, not if you can make political hay out of it. Now, I did not read the whole thing, but the excerpts that I saw from the majority opinion, troubled me a little bit. Kia, I don't know if you read much of it, of what the justices had to say, but certainly, again, when you hear what far right conservatives, say about this topic overall, it's clear they consider this a monumental victory.
Yeah, no, I have not. I can't say I've read much of the decision, but yeah, I mean, you see the most anti-abortion forces online, celebrating. And then ironically, you see the, you know, candidates who used to be really, really anti-abortion in Arizona now like tripping over themselves to run away from this. And I'll kick it to Cam in a second, but because I know he had a really good piece on this, but it just tells you they know the politics of this are awful for them.
Oh my God, between this and the Alabama Supreme Court, with IVF, Cam, I'm sure you've got a few politicians out there who suddenly are trying to sound more moderate than they historically have been.
Yes. And, you know, it's interesting you mentioned the Alabama IVF ruling situation that happened out there, because bringing back this old law puts Arizona's fertility clinics at risk to wrongful death lawsuits in the same way that Alabama did. The only difference is nobody's sued yet, because now those protections that were in Roe v. Wade and were in a previous abortion ban have been removed. And so those are gone. And politicians are very much realizing this. Again, it's being divided between the ideological diehards, like our own Arizona Freedom Caucus, who think abortion should be banned outright, you know, harsh penalties, no matter what the political fallout. And then you have the politicians who are in battleground districts who realize that this is going to bury them in November, who support a total ban, but they don't support it right now when they're about to start campaigning.
Oh, and did I see right that two of the justices have, what are they called, retention elections or something?
Yes. Two of the justices are up for retention this year. We historically have had a hard time in voting out justices here, but if there ever were a movement for that to happen, it would be this right now.
Oh, without a doubt. But then, you know, on the heels of this, I saw some interesting slash troubling video that you folks put out from the Copper Courier of a prayer circle of such in the legislature. Now, prayer in the legislature is not, you know, completely unheard of. But I mean, this was a prayer circle with it. Did I see right? It was like speaking in tongues as well.
Yeah. If you listen to the clip, and we have it on our website, and you think your microphone, you know, your stereo is working wrong, or your audio is glitching out, it's not. It really is a group of, I think, six or seven people bowing before the state seal that is on the carpet on the ground of the Senate chambers. Speaking in tongues, State Senator Anthony Kern, who is currently a legislator, formerly a fake elector, and also insurrection adjacent, as he spent some time at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. You can hear him praying and supplicating for his God to fill this chamber. And they were all there. It was the day before the announcement that the Supreme Court was making. And it was shortly after the Supreme Court said that they would have a ruling out the next day. And so this group came in there to pray for this ban to go into effect.
Not troubling at all. Not at all. Meanwhile, Kia, in the case of, you know, the dog that caught the car, you had former President Trump saying early in the week, making what we thought would be the bigger story of the week, saying, you know, this all ought to be left up to the states and then Arizona rules. And he essentially says, no, not like that. And what kind of a week was it for the Trump campaign and for the states' rights kind of messaging they had hoped to do on abortion?
Yeah, I mean, I think it shows the pitfalls of that and the dangers of that, because, you know, Trump is, you know, I don't want to give him too much credit, but he's smart enough politically to understand that he can't go anywhere near a nationwide abortion ban. But also, if he, you know, says it's up to the states are now banning a lot of the states are now banning abortion because of the justices he appointed. So he's kind of caught between a rock and a hard place, like looking at it purely politically, because
of his own making.
Yeah, of his own making. And so there's like bad and maybe less bad for him, but it's all bad. You know, you have women who are, you know, having ectopic pregnancies. You have women who are dying. You have women who are being forced to give birth, and all over the country. And, you know, there was an event in North Carolina on Wednesday where a woman from Texas and a woman from Louisiana were at a Biden campaign event talking about how their abortion bans in their states basically, in one case, like nearly killed one of them, and in another one, really complicated, like really created health risks. And so, you know, those stories aren't going away. People, you know, get pregnant all the time. And so this is a real problem for the Trump campaign of his own making, as you said. And so, you know, there's no real running from it. Like, he can try, but, you know, it's one of those stories that it's really hard to spin.
Well, especially when you have the Biden campaign doing just what you said. Those same two women are going to be in Wisconsin next week, again, on a speaking tour. It's funny because you've got these swing states, these key states like Wisconsin, like Arizona, with a lot of activity, North Carolina as well, with a lot of speakers. We had D.C. police officer Michael Fanone on the program, you know, a couple of days back. People, the Biden campaign and others definitely understand the value of these states. Now, let's head over to Virginia, where on a somewhat related note, again, about women and their reproductive health rights, the Republican governor there apparently is going on the attack about the right to contraception, Kia.
Yeah, he basically had the opportunity to sign a bill that would have given Virginians a legal right to contraception, you know, condoms, birth control pills, IUDs. But instead he, you know, proposed an amendment to it that basically, you know, supporters of the bill say would just effectively totally undermine it and make protecting access to birth control more of a suggestion than, you know, a legal guarantee. And so, you know, they, the Youngkin team said that, you know, he supports access to contraception, but also wants to protect, you know, constitutional rights. And so they're kind of, you know, muddling their message, but effectively he also, you know, separately from that, he also vetoed bills that would have protected doctors and patients for abortions performed legally in Virginia. I believe this was one where, you know, patients coming from out of state. And so, you know, when it, and this is a governor who last year tried to win full control of the legislature by running on a 15-week abortion ban and failed spectacularly. Mm-hmm. So, you know, again, even the quote unquote moderate, like sweater vest wearing Republicans are still, you know, not on the side of what people actually want.
Cam, yesterday morning, we had our weekly visit with our friends from Motherhood for Good. And I asked them about, you know, other states, and they said in Arizona there is a very active group of moms who, again, try to let other busy parents know about the issues and get them activated. Is that something that you see in terms of not just parties and not just candidates, but other outside groups trying to get more people plugged into the you know, the civic discourse instead of getting frustrated and tuning out?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a pretty strong argument here that a lot of the restrictive, you know, conservative policies that did turn people away from politics originally is now invigorating a whole generation out here in Arizona. It started with SB 1070, which was like a very harsh anti-immigration law about 15 years ago. And then it kind of grew into probably what your other guest was talking about with you know, parental involvement when school vouchers started to come out in Arizona. There's a very vocal group called Save Our Schools Arizona, which is made up of parents, educators, people who successfully overturned legislation to expand the voucher program. Now, the Republican governor at the time ignored them and found a way to expand it anyway. But that speaks to their movement. There's also, of course, there's a ballot proposition here in Arizona there's an effort to bring a ballot proposition that would protect reproductive rights like abortion care in the state constitution. And organizers for that ballot proposition have already gathered over 500,000 signatures for their effort. Which is more than any other citizens initiative in state history.
You are not going to be bored over there. Let's end with a little bit of good news. I also saw a headline out of Arizona about a proposal that would wipe out some folks' medical debt. Tell us more.
Yeah, this is actually a groundbreaking. I would say it's historic, and it's going to change hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people's lives with the fall off. But essentially, our Democratic governor, Katie Hobbs, was able to use federal funding from a Biden initiative to purchase medical debt. They used about $30 million, or they're in the process of using $30 million to buy $2 billion worth of medical debt for pennies on the dollar, and they're going to forget it. The process is going to take a couple years, but it's wiping out more than 80% of medical debt in the state, which is huge. I mean, if anyone's ever, you know, had sticker shock going to the hospital or even just going in for a checkup, you know how detrimental these kind of bills can be. And so it's incredible. And I don't know of anywhere else that's doing anything like it.
It would be quite a game changer. Kia, for all the talk about the Biden administration canceling student loan debt, maybe this is where they need to go looking next.
Yeah, I mean, we are seeing, I think that's probably the biggest endeavor we've seen. But there have been smaller cities and towns also doing similar efforts using American Rescue Plan funds. But
there's even been people like Stephen Colbert, I think, did that once. He bought a big block of debt. It can be done. You just need the spinal fortitude to do it, much like Arizona's governor. And Arizona's very lucky to have Cam Stevenson from the Copper Courier there. Cam, thanks so much. It's great to visit with you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Anytime.
You bet. Kia, good to see you. Have a great weekend.
You too. Thanks.
See ya.
Today's history lesson is next. You're up north.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
The Todd Alba Show.
Former state senator and majority leader in the state Senate, Dale Schultz.
Legislators aren't doing their job. But what I would ask all the listeners is, have you taken stock in your legislator? Do they really deserve to be there? Do they really want to be there in a polite way? Ask them to come and share a vision, listen to you, and say we want regular communication. And I think if we do that, the system will serve us very well.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when. Don't find yourself saying,
when the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out.
The scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin.
I'll face a hurricane without meds. Now that's a tough pill to swallow.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Going way back into the late night talk show archives for this one. Today's birthdays. Those of us of a certain age, this was regular viewing. Late Night with David Letterman on NBC, long before The Late Show. David Letterman is 77 years old today. Was in your own late night viewing, because obviously it took you to late night comedy clubs. Were you a Letterman watcher of The Late Show or Late Night, the NBC show, or the CBS show?
Yeah, absolutely. I love Letterman. I didn't watch Letterman after The Tonight Show a lot because I was a lot younger. But as I got older and he got just before he left, I'd watch it. And then I watched his late night show on CBS. Absolutely love Letterman, which I think without Letterman, I don't think we have Conan. And Conan took what Letterman did 100 yards down the field.
Letterman was just such a breath of fresh air. It was just all so different, but different funny, not different like, what's he doing? It was funny. More birthdays today. Herbie Hancock, this one surprised me. He's 84 today.
Dang, Herbie.
Yeah. Yeah, well, Herbie Hancock, who, as we learned from Tommy Boy, is a close descendant of John Hancock.
When people come into the club and they have to sign their name on their ticket purchase, I always say, I need to get your Herbie Hancock, please.
And they get it. Actor Ed O'Neill from Married with Children and then Modern Family. Ed O'Neill is 78 years old today. Singer Vince Gill is 67.
Yeah.
The number one hit this day in 1975 was by Elton John. Tiny Tim, the singer and ukulele player, was born this day in 1932. I used to be a Rolling Stone, you know. Former governor, the late Tony Earle, was born this day in 1936. He passed away last year, 40th governor of Wisconsin. On this day in 1969, The Fifth Dimension was number one with Aquarius, Let the Sun Shine In. We'll hear that in our next hour. On this day in 1861... the Civil War began with the Battle of Fort Sumter, with Confederate forces firing on that American fort in the harbor of Charleston. Then in 1961, on this day, Soviet cosmonaut Yuri Gagarin became the first human to travel into outer space. REM released their debut album, Murmur, on this day in 1983. This day in 1955, the polio vaccine developed by Dr. Jonas Salk is declared safe and effective. And the note I wrote here a year ago is still true today. Back when it was developed, the polio vaccine, a young Ron Johnson immediately declared that it's filled with microchips, which was quite a conspiracy considering that they hadn't been invented yet. On this day in 1989, Garth Brooks released his self-titled debut album, If Tomorrow Never Comes, which also includes The Dance, and this one here, one of my favorite Garth Brooks songs. And the white line's getting longer, and the saddle's getting cold. I'm much too young needle point on a pillow. Much too young to feel this damn old. There's just too many days like that.
Yeah.
Rush released their 10th studio album, Grace Under Pressure, this day in 1984. In 1999, the Backstreet Boys released I Want It That Way, and in 2013, Fall Out Boy issued Save Rock and Roll. On the national calendar for today, this is Day of Silence. It's a campaign that seeks to shed light on what many LGBTQ youth have to experience daily. So if you see somebody participating in that, maybe now you'll understand why. This is National Grilled Cheese Sandwich Day, National Fast and Prayer Day, National Hamster Day, and National Only Child Day. Greg, you are not an only child. You have siblings?
I have a sister.
You have a sister. That's right. Okay. Yep. I thought I heard. And I've got two sisters. You always joke that I went from having a mom and two sisters to a wife and two daughters. So small wonder that I am, shall we say, one of those who wants to smash the patriarchy, even as he looks and sounds exactly like the patriarchy.
Hi, I'm here from the patriarchy. I'm the example.
Yeah, try not to be, because you know what? While other kids were growing up with Sports Illustrated magazine or maybe Guns and Ammo or whatever, being raised in the household I was, the magazine I read all through the 70s was Cosmo. So,
there's a lot to learn from that album.
Mm-hmm. So, sports-wise, there isn't much to say because the Brewers were rained out yesterday, and so they will move on and have their series. Oh my gosh, I lost my paper schedule. Hang on, Dan. Let me get that. I know you're not mocking me.
I'm not. No one's mocking you for having a paper. Okay, listeners, while he finds his paper schedule that he's now shaking in the camera's face, Pat wants us to make fun of him for his paper schedule, and nobody cares that he does. I'm happy he has it. He has two of them.
I told you.
Great.
Somebody snorted at me once, and I took it very personally.
You snort back. They're not worth your time.
6:05 is the start. And, oh, I would have had that in front of me if I'd have looked at the other thing that Luke Mathers gives us, and that's the start times across the Civic Media Radio Network. There, if I'd have had that in front of me, I would have said properly, you can hear the Brewers playing in Baltimore against the Orioles starting at 5:30. News from the Center and Richland Center, WRJN in Racine, Oshkosh Air Support, and 98Q Country in Park Falls. Or you may be more of a basketball fan. And the Milwaukee Bucks are at Oklahoma City tonight in the penultimate game of the regular season. Showing off his big vocabulary.
No, I love it. I love using that word.
You can catch that Bucks-Oklahoma City game starting at 6:30 on locally grown radio in Wisconsin Rapids and Lake Air in Amory. So the Brewers will be in Baltimore through the weekend. The Bucks then head to Orlando on Sunday for their final game of the regular season, and then the postseason will get underway. And looking ahead to next week, the Brewers just have a quick three-game homestand against the San Diego Padres Monday, Tuesday evenings, and Wednesday afternoon. And then they are back on the road to take on St. Louis and the Pittsburgh Pirates. So some busy division games will be coming up before much longer here. I completely lost my train of thought. I was going to say, in our next hour, because it's so busy. I'm trying to keep track of it all. We have the head of the National Committee to Protect Social Security and Medicare, who would like to weigh in on Eric Hovde's comments about voters in nursing homes. We're going to talk to former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel. He has the new Saturday morning show Amicus about legal issues, and we will talk about Donald Trump going on trial starting on Monday. Jury selection will begin in one of his many upcoming trials. Mark Jacob, Dan Schumacher, all along the way in the second hour of Up North News Radio on this Friday morning, live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network.
From Birchwood to Poplar, this is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH, your home for news, talk, and sports.
Max Inc. on Civic Media, live in the lair with Kaylin Cole.
Have you ever walked away from a karaoke performance thinking, yeah, that was a lot better than the original person?
Oh my gosh, I don't know if I should admit that or not.
I think you should. Because now we know where's the song.
Jimmy's talking on it now.
I know. You're going to get me in trouble, Jimmy.
It's Live in the Lair. Grab the podcast now at MaxIncRadio.com and listen live on Saturday night, 6 to midnight, across the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is the Buzz of the North, WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. FBI Director Christopher Wray says there is no more time to waste. Congress